Let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go.
Welcome inside the playbook for Thursday on Patriots.com radio, and we're ready to go. Can we kick this game off yet on Monday night? Pats and Denver Broncos, Monday night here at Gillette Stadium. It seems like it has been forever, and we still got to wait.
Actually,
Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Four more days.
Actually, it would be nice to have the weekend off, John.
You got to look. You're absolutely right. Eric Scalavino, of course, from Patriots Football Weekly, joining us as he does on Thursdays. And frankly, you're absolutely right about that. And I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, my college football schedule this year has been a kind of a weird one. I've had a lot of the weeknight games rather than the Saturday, you know, usual schedule, just because that's what they've decided to nationally put on radio. Mm-hmm. And so I've actually had my weekends to watch college football on Saturdays. And the last couple of weeks I've been able to watch, you know, other games in addition to the Patriots on Sunday.
Yeah.
And I'm loving the heck out of it.
Perfect, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. So you're right. We get all day Sunday to watch football again.
Yeah.
It's great,
and just to be home because we've been away. You probably missed me last week. Didn't you?
I did miss you guys last week a lot. As 10 days,
10 days out in California. It was actually a great trip. It was a great trip overall.
Yeah,
Sunday night aside, it was a great trip.
Are you still fighting the jet lag a little? I asked Mike that yesterday, and he said, "Yeah, it's just kind of like getting his sea legs back under."
Yeah, waking up in the morning is a little harder.
Like you're straight up at 5 a.m. or whatever it is.
That's what it was like.
Or it's hard to go to bed at 5 a.m. Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
But no, it's not bad. It's good to be back home. But when they made the schedule, it was advantageous that we had the Monday night game coming off of this trip. Because we got back like 7:30, almost 8 o'clock Monday morning from San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And had to finish doing what we had to do for the paper. So by the time we got home and, I had to do a little something writing at home. So Monday was kind of shot, and then I had Tuesday off, but recuperate a little bit. But it's going to be nice to have the week.
Now, let me ask you something. When you do the bi-coastal thing here, do you go into it? Do you have to take, like, you know, some Tylenol PM or something to get you to sleep a little bit, or do you have trouble sleeping on planes?
I have no trouble sleeping anywhere, anytime.
Oh, see, I do. I can't do something about the motion of an airplane and a train, for that matter, because I have to commute sometimes to New York and going to Penn Station, and I can't sleep on the plane, and I can't sleep on the train. I don't know why. I can doze, but I never really get any sleep. And I've had a bunch of early morning flights lately.
Yep.
And so it's kind of like, you know, when I get to the airport, it's like I'm not going for the coffee yet. I don't even, you know, consider coffee until about 7:30 in the morning. Because I need to do that.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I need to do.
Nah.
But I can't do it.
I have no problem. And if I'm tired and need to sleep, wherever I am, doesn't matter.
Mm. That's a bonus. That's a real bonus. I'll have that, unfortunately, in November when basketball rolls around. But anyway, we digress. What are your thoughts on this team at least trying to pick itself back up after the debacle last week? And, you know, I heard you guys going through your picks a little while ago, and frankly, I'm not convinced I share your enthusiasm for the Pats. I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm leaning more towards Andy Hart.
Oh, man.
And the only reason is that I need to be shown. I have not physically seen evidence yet that this team is capable of doing.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, when it comes to the Pats, I always try to be optimistic as opposed to pessimistic.
Fine. That's absolutely fine.
Even when your gut tells you maybe otherwise, I just have a hard time picking against them. You know, especially the squad that they have the last few years, and this Monday night game is going to be tough though, John, because they never ever have it easy with the Broncos. Whether it's here or out in Denver, they always have a hard time with the Broncos.
That's another reason for my conundrum right now is the fact that, you know, traditionally they have a hard time with Denver.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean.
Denver came here a couple of years ago on a was a Sunday or a Monday night. Might have been a Sunday night, but they, that was the Javon Walker game when he caught a couple of the long touchdowns.
Yeah, that's right. It was, let's see if I can figure it out here. That was Gillette Stadium. Yeah, that was the 24-16 back on, it was 2002. No. Last year.
More recent.
It was 2 years ago.
Right.
17-7. Walker caught the two long touchdowns.
Yes,
two long touchdowns. 17-7 in 06.
Right.
That's correct. So, yeah, when you look at the series between the two teams.
Lost that one, lost the playoff game in 06.
They've lost the last three times they have played.
Or 05.
Denver.
When was that?
They lost in 05 at Invesco Field.
Yeah, right. That was
they
the
lost
game.
In 06 regular season, and they lost 06 playoffs. Yeah, 27-13 in Invesco Field. Remember that one?
Oh, right.
Yeah. So actually, I didn't exactly go in numerical or date order there, but yeah, they've lost the last three times they've played. Mm-hmm. They have lost the last two times they've played. In fact, the only two times that Denver has played at Gillette Stadium, Denver's won.
Yeah.
How about that one?
I know, that's
Denver's played here twice since Gillette Stadium opened, and they've won both times.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Now you get. Now you're beginning to see why I feel the way I do.
No. You're. I mean, yeah. You're going logically with it, and that's not a bad way to go. I just knowing Belichick teams, coming off losses, especially bad losses, they typically do well. I mean, you saw it. They got kicked in the teeth by Miami. They came out and handed it to San Francisco.
No doubt.
They had that hiccup against. A pretty big hiccup. I mean, Bill talked about it the other day. They played pretty competitively, except for four or five really big plays, which turned the game around.
What, and against San Diego?
Against San Diego.
Well, I think we all saw that the fulcrum of that game was the goal line stand.
Well, that was the fulcrum of it. But for the most part, they were with the Chargers.
Yeah, even though I'd never felt completely confident that they were going to jump into the fray. I mean, that 17-3 at that stage at halftime could have been a lot worse.
Right.
It should have been probably 17-10 at half,
right.
By my thinking, and then, of course, going down to the opening drive of the third quarter with a chance to tie it up. But at 17-3, I felt like it could have been, it probably should have been worse.
They didn't play a great game in any aspect. I mean, Bill said they were competitive. That's fine. But they didn't play a great game. They didn't play like they did in San Francisco.
Yeah, here's the thing. Do you want them to be competitive or do you want them to be, contenders here?
No, I know.
I mean, come on. We're not used to having just competitive teams here. We're used to kicking people's ass. And so in that regard, and of course I use the collective we here, but I'm just saying that, this is the perception of the Patriots. Mm-hmm. And because the Patriots are not doing what they've done in the past, my friends and those that who cover the league, no matter where they are in this country, and a lot of the guys that I know at ESPN and such, the Patriots pale by comparison. And it's unfair because you really should consider each and every season, if not each and every game, a separate entity unto itself. But it's hard to do based on the past history, especially recently.
Yeah, but you know what, John? The Patriots haven't really, except for last year, the first half of last year, maybe the first three quarters of last year, up until about the Philadelphia game, they were blowing teams out last year. But prior to that, even during the Super Bowl streaks in 03, 04, they were beating teams by field goals, by touchdowns. They weren't blowing people out. They would come down to the end of the game. So, their record might show, they were 14-2 a couple of times, but they weren't blowing people out in those seasons. They were winning by smaller margins and a lot of times at the end of the game. This whole thing about the Patriots blowing people out, I mean, it only really happened for a short time last year. They were winning those games.
Yeah.
Sure, they weren't blowing people out, though, but they were the difference is they were winning those games.
I guess I guess I'm overgeneralizing. I guess that's, part of the perception. They managed to win games that we all thought they should win, even though they weren't blowing them out. You kind of chalk it up to, okay, they just took care of business and they're moving on.
I mean, they won three Super Bowls by a combined 9 points.
That's true. They haven't blown anybody out in the Super Bowl.
No.
They've gotten blown out in the Super Bowl, but they haven't blown anybody out. That's interesting. Well, time will tell on Monday. I think I'm still in a show me state, and it's nothing to do with Missouri and Texas this weekend.
Strippers just
sent me an email. He says Mizzou over Texas. Wow, that's a shock.
How about the Red River Shootout before we go any further?
Yeah,
you must have been happy about that, huh? 10-point win.
Thrilled. Strippers wasn't happy though.
No.
He whined.
He's never happy anyway.
He whined and he moaned and he's like, I can't sleep. I can't eat. I practically cried. What a baby. Boo.
This guy works with strippers for a living and he's always crying.
I know. And he's crying.
Come on, get over it.
I know. No kidding. Come on, dude.
Look on the bright side.
Yeah, really.
A lot of bright sides.
There's a lot of bright sides. Absolutely. You know?
But where were we going? I lost.
Talking about strippers. Yeah. I lost my train of thought. We were talking about Texas over Missouri.
Yeah, before that.
Actually, I'm kind of worried about that game, to be honest with you. Just like
letdown game?
Yeah. Well, fortunately, all right, it's in Austin. Although a lot of people could say that, there's even more of a chance to let down at home, that if they were playing on the road, they'd have to make sure they keep that mental edge thing, going. So, and Missouri is very good, but you know what? The winner of this game, that quarterback will be the leader in the clubhouse for the Heisman.
Yeah.
Between Colt McCoy and Chase Daniel.
Colt McCoy and Chase Daniel, yeah, absolutely. I didn't realize Texas had the fifth largest stadium by capacity in college football.
This is because they just enlarged it.
Oh, really?
They just added, when I was in school there, it was about 77,000. And, good-sized stadium, but, it was, built back in Korean War days. Then they enlarged it to 81, 82 right after I got out of school in the early 80s. And then they've had like two or three smaller additions. And just this last year, they've closed in everything in the north end zone. And they've got skyboxes. They've got double levels everywhere now. And they added about another 12,000 seats.
Is there not a track around the field?
There is no more track.
No?
They took the track out in order
to put more seats in.
Oh. And that happened back in the 90s.
That
was the last addition before the current one they put on, was they took the track out and they have their own separate now track stadium and facility, which is unbelievable. I mean, if you haven't been, oh my gosh. It's, talk about facilities. There's not a school in the country that has anything better than what Texas has. But the football capacity now is 92,000. And they even have, get this now, this is, we're talking about, absolute money atop
Thanks
of money.
Thanks for joining us on Longhorns Playbook.
Exactly. They actually have plans in the works to increase it to 100,000.
Well, it's a competition among the,
five. It kind of is. But, yeah, it's the fifth largest now. It's the largest stadium in the Southwest. I remember when Texas A&M, talk about rivalries, I remember the Texas A&M, when they did their enlargement of Kyle Field probably 10, 15 years ago, they increased the seating capacity by one seat over Memorial Stadium in Austin. Come on.
Blatantly obvious.
Damn Aggies. They suck anyway, so what can I tell you? All right, we've totally digressed now, but that's because you got me off track talking about the Longhorns, so. It's your fault.
Has to happen.
We'll blame you.
At least once a show.
Well, hey, I got to tout the number one team because you don't know how long you're going to last with the number one ranking.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been four different number ones this year, right?
No, it's
and,
fun.
And I don't
fun.
And I don't expect Texas to stay up there. I really don't. The schedule is too daunting. Mm-hmm. And you can ask anybody that knows me. I've said all along, everybody says, hey, how are the Longhorns going to do this year? And I've always said, I don't have my hopes up. I said, the schedule is just too brutal. Mm. And when you say Oklahoma, Missouri, at Okie State, at Tech, at Kansas, come on. That's brutal. And when you consider four teams from the Big 12 South are ranked in the top 10 in the nation now, come on. Come on. Are you serious?
I'm not saying.
Yeah, I know. That's just, that's ridiculous. Totally ridiculous. And what does that have to do with Monday night? I have no idea, other than the fact that it's great to actually talk a little college football and make it relevant.
Mm.
Let me ask you a question. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to tell this to Andy, because he asked me the other day when we were crossing over before shows. He said, what do you think of Colt McCoy as a potential pro pick? Mm-hmm. And I said, I hadn't really thought much about it because, number one, before this year, that was not on the radar.
Right.
And number two, he has said from day one he is committed to playing 4 years at Texas.
Yeah.
He's strangely silent about that right now, which I can't say that comes as a huge surprise. Mm-hmm. He is a fourth-year junior.
Yeah.
So he would be eligible.
Get a degree.
He would be eligible. I sent an email to a couple of friends that I know in the business, one of them being Mel Kiper.
Uh-huh.
He says, he hadn't heard that McCoy is going to come out. But if he did right now, he'd say that, especially if he wins the Heisman, he'd be a first-round pick.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm.
I personally don't see it.
I don't see it.
Right now, I'd say based on what you see of him now, I'd say, sure, I'd take a shot at him in the second or third round.
Yeah.
I think you could certainly say he's a first-day guy. I don't know if he's a first-round guy. But if Texas continues to win, he continues to throw at an ungodly 79% completion rate, which is what he's currently throwing as. Mm-hmm. His touchdown-interception ratio is like 18-3. So if he continues to do that and Texas wins and, oh, yeah, he wins the Heisman, I think you'd have to say he's probably somewhere in the first round. I don't think he's a top two or three pick.
He doesn't bowl me over.
Well, here's the thing, and this is where I think that there can be some improvement with what we've seen with Matt Cassel, and that's how the conversation actually got started. Was he was a little plodding.
Who are we talking about? Cassel?
McCoy. Oh. McCoy was. He was a little plodding when he first started out as a freshman, and as a sophomore, a little bit better, but then he was dinged up a lot as a soph as well, so that was a little bit of a problem. But what he did is he worked on his feet. He's got great lateral movement. He's got good quickness. He's not overly fast, although he's increased his speed. He's about a 4.5 40 now. But you can just see it in his footwork. And so when he sets up in the pocket, he's much more balanced. He's much more straight. His shoulders are square. And even when he's throwing on the run out of the pocket, this is what Jay Cutler, I think, brings to the table for Monday night. And I was talking a little bit about this with Jaron Jaworski yesterday. I love to name drop on this show. Why not? Yeah, we got to give people a reason to listen.
You work for ESPN.
You don't listen to me. You listen to the guys we bring here on the show. That's the whole point here, right? But, I work with these guys. And Jaworski says that Cutler is got a rocket arm. I mean, you can almost see the trail behind the football as he releases it. And the way that you develop that certainly is strength, number one. But number two, you got to be square. You got to be square to your target. If you can square up and hit your target like that, you're going to be able to get more steam on it. And that's what McCoy is doing. Colt McCoy, he's got the better footwork. And so, I asked Jaws yesterday in particular, what do you see of Matt Cassel? Where do you think he could improve? And, one of the first things he mentioned is, yeah, definitely footwork. But he's got to work on staying in the pocket and finding that little niche like Brady was so good at doing. Brady had the tendency to make his offensive linemen look good even when there was a missed assignment because Tom had that subtle little sidestep or he could see that little crack in the pocket he could slip into and then, bang, release the ball. And Matt hasn't learned how to do that. And a lot of that is just from having been in that pocket and having it collapse around you a lot.
Anticipating how it's
where you exactly do that. And plus, admittedly, one of the other things Cassel has to work on is quicker release. He's holding onto the ball way too long. We all know this. But he sees enough. Ron Jaworski sees enough in Matt Cassel to agree with the assessment that Cassel is better than anything else that the Patriots could go and get.
Out there on the market, yeah.
Yes.
That
includes Jeff Garcia. That certainly includes John Kitna, Chris Sims, anybody else you want to throw in there.
Not Sims, no. Kitna's on IR now, I believe.
Yes, he did get put. Well, the deal was if Detroit couldn't trade him, they were putting him on IR, and they couldn't trade him by the deadline, so they put him on IR. That's what they did.
Surprised that he didn't get
picked up? Mildly surprised?
Yeah, mildly surprised.
I'm not. I just think too many people are kind of like damaged goods,
Yeah.
So, they're not terribly surprised. Not terribly surprised. Maybe another shot next year with another team. But, I'd bring in Kitna as a great veteran backup. Mm-hmm. Patriots will be looking for a backup next year. And they've still got to bring along O'Connell. Now, I'm assuming that, O'Connell
is already the backup this year.
Technically he is, yes. And I'm assuming that would be the case again next year because Cassel's going to go off and play someplace else. I think everybody realizes that.
One way or the other.
He's going off. If you decide that, you got to bring in a quarterback somewhere, I would think. One quarterback. You have O'Connell, you have Gutierrez as well for next year. And you probably bring in somebody else. Why not bring in a vet? To see if he can provide that little extra insurance, because it's going to take Brady a little while to get back into sync.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially when you come back from an injury, and I use Carson Palmer as a perfect case in point. It really took Palmer all of his first year back to get back to where he was, and even now he's struggling, because he's banged up again. But I'm just saying, don't be shocked next year if Brady isn't Brady right at the start. Too many fans and too many people around the country are going to expect Tom Brady to be Tom Brady right from the get-go.
Do you think if he's healthy enough at that point that he'll play more in this coming preseason than he would have in the past?
Who, Tom? Yeah. Brady? I wouldn't see any reason why not. He's got to get out there and test it somewhere, right? Don't you think? I realize there's an injury possibility here, but I certainly think that he would come out and play at least a quarter. And then you want to balance the rest of the time between O'Connell and Gutierrez, fine. That's fine if you indeed think that Gutierrez is still, you know.
I mean, in each of the four games, does he get, like, you know, because typically you play a series or two, and then in the third game you don't play.
You got to get back into shape.
I mean, in the fourth game you don't play.
Yeah, I realize that. But, I mean, you got to get back into shape, Eric. We just don't know he doesn't know what he has until you get up there and you throw. I mean, there's no reason to believe that he can't be, 100% healthy by next year, because he's got a lot of time to rehab. We all know what his work ethic is. So, I mean, I have no reason to believe that he won't be ready to go maybe even by June minicamp. You never know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible.
It's possible.
It's possible. But I'm just, again, a guy like Kitna or if Garcia, someone like that, if they are available, gosh, why not take a flyer and see if they can make your team? Especially now that you know that, you know, the injury has occurred and it could always happen again.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about, you know, how devastating it's been this year. What happened if it happened again next year? I mean, you know, we might as well just forfeit. This team isn't getting any younger.
Well, in some aspects it is.
But it's not getting younger fast enough, and that's what worries me. I think we're seeing still that this team has some work to do, you know, certainly in the secondary, but in the linebacking core. This team has some work to do on the offensive line.
Well, the whole front seven, John, has been a little bit of a disappointment for me.
I agree with that. The defensive line overall
is. There's no pass rush.
No, there's none.
Save for the San Francisco game where they got good pressure on O'Sullivan. They haven't done what I expected them to do and what I think a lot of other people expected them to do at this point.
What does Richard Seymour still have left on his contract?
I can't remember offhand. I think he's got, he signed that extension, I think it was in...
2 years ago? 3 years ago?
I think it was...
2 years ago.
I think it was 2 years ago.
Right.
It was right before his knee injury.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was 04?
I thought that was 05.
Yeah, 05. You're right.
Yeah. So if that's the case,
I think
then
that was
he's
like 5 year extension.
Yeah, right? So he's got.
So he's got like 2 more years.
Two right? more years on it. See, it's almost to the point where it's swallowable. You know,
maybe.
I'm throwing stuff out there just to see if it sticks right now. But frankly, I think just because
talking about possible trade.
Well,
trade
not only trade, but just you know the ability to to realize that I think we need to make a move here.
Yeah,
I think, to bring in somebody else. I mean, I don't have any problems with Ty Warren, per se. I think he's actually still playing pretty well. Vince Wilfork, you can't get enough space eaters.
Mm.
But I think if you really need to make an impact, number one, I would love to see this team shelve the 3-4 and go with more of a upright pass-rushing defensive end.
Well, it's funny you say that.
Can I give you a name?
Sure.
From the college ranks.
Okay.
Brian Arakpo. From Texas. Guy is unbelievable. He is absolutely unbelievable. He is speed personified on the end right now. He's unbelievable.
Well,
he should be a top draft pick.
All right. I'll keep an eye on him. You mentioned going to the 4-3. They haven't gone to it as their base, but in the last couple of games, they have been utilizing more four-down linemen.
Yeah, they went largely with a 4-2-5 last week,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's why we didn't see a lot of Brewski. They're right. Only going with a couple of linebackers.
Jarvis Green was that guy until he got hurt, okay. And Mike Wright took a lot of the snaps after that point.
Jarvis Green was a guy I wasn't thinking of. Obviously, he's the X factor in all this, because I'd love to see Jarvis Green be an every-down guy.
Well, the thing about him is he's made impact when he's been a reserve coming in to replace someone. When he's had to start, he hasn't had that much success.
Mm-hmm.
Like last year, I think when Seymour was on PUP for 6 weeks, Jarvis was taking his spot and played adequately.
Pretty well.
Had no complaints with his play, but he didn't have the 3-sack kind of games that he did when he was coming in, like
especially
against Cincinnati or even against the
Colts.
That's
because he's a great change of pace guy.
That's the thing. So I think that's more his role for him to be an every down guy. He'd be serviceable, but I don't think he'd be the spectacular kind of difference that you're looking for.
That's fair.
So that if that's the change you're looking for, I don't know. I think it's kind of a wash there.
Well, I just thought that it would utilize a little bit more of their talent in terms of the depth, and you wouldn't have the linebacking core as susceptible. You know, if you could say you put Bruschi in the middle and you alternated him with one of the young guys or whatever the case may be. I just thought that, you know, maybe because you have older depth in the linebacking core, it'd be better to, you know, lessen, you know, the amount of reps that those guys get. The best way to do that is to put fewer out there.
Maybe.
I mean, and you still have personnel where you could play the three, you play the 4-3.
Like what I've seen out of Mayo in the middle.
You can still utilize a nose tackle with a 4-3. You know that, right?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
You just play the tackle over the stinking center and go with a lot of college teams do that. A lot of college teams play a traditional 4-3, but they line
their tackle over.
Yeah, they line the nose up. In effect, he's a nose tackle.
And then they just go strong to one side or the other.
Exactly. I see no reason why the Patriots couldn't do that. And I'm not sure why the philosophy is we got to stick with the 3-4 or, you know, we're going to slit our throats. That's what it seems like.
I think they just feel that with the personnel they have, that's their, you know, what they're.
It's time for a personnel shift, though. I guess is what I'm kind of getting to. Now you're talking about who in particular, Mayo. You said
in the linebacking core.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you've got to be happy with what you've seen out of him.
No doubt. I'd love to see him, you know, come in and
so if they went to more of a 4-3, no problem keeping him in the middle.
No, none. No, I think he'd be great. Mm. In fact, I think, you know, with, you know, a healthy Vince Wilfork and with Jerod Mayo playing behind him, that's pretty tough to run against up the gut.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care who's blocking you. I don't care what lineman's blocking you. Mm-hmm. You get by Wilfork and you got Mayo standing there, to me, that just makes a lot of sense. You're trying to create this team and mold it to your strengths. I happen to think that would be a strength right up the middle. If you played, you know, two down tackles, play one if you want over the nose guard, but you put in somebody like a Ty Warren next to him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you got Mayo backing him up. That's pretty strong. That's pretty strong. I got to admit. You know, so I'm just, you know, again, we're kind of flying here and, you know, and playing with it because, hey, that's what we're.
Yeah.
It's kind of what we're paid to do here.
That's what we do.
Exactly. But, you know, to me, it makes a lot of sense, and I wouldn't be at all surprised to see some kind of a shift like that, and I'm kind of curious as to why maybe that shift hasn't happened.
Well, I like that they did that, sort of mixed it up against San Francisco. They came out of the gates with four linemen.
We thought,
oh, this is great. They were rushing the quarterback a lot. They didn't get a whole lot of sacks, but.
They got pressure.
They got a lot of great pressure. They had him scrambling around, throwing on the run, trying to escape the collapsing pocket. And it worked. And against San Diego, they really didn't even try to go after Rivers. And he stood there and picked them apart.
Right.
So I'd like to see more consistency in the pass rush, sending Thomas, when they go to the four linemen configuration, Thomas ends up leaving the edge and coming in the middle a lot of the times.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's best making plays on the outside. From what I've said, the last few games of last year, early on.
I can't disagree with that. I mean, I thought that's why we got Adalys Thomas, didn't we?
Yeah.
So he could be an edge rusher.
Right.
And you put him on one side, and you put Vrabel on the other, and then you get after it, right?
That's what I was expecting this year, and I haven't been seeing it.
We haven't seen that. No. Not at all. So I think that's what's somewhat troubling. Maybe they feel like, I don't know, maybe they feel like that's... they've had to keep them back simply because of run defense. I don't know, but those guys generally aren't run defenders, which is what is somewhat troubling, I think. You know, that's why I'm kind of looking at.
So, you know, they're playing Monday night against a quarterback who they haven't faced before, right? Cutler wasn't.
No.
He wasn't playing. Mm-hmm. I can't remember who the quarterback was in that.
No, it was.
Was it still Plummer?
Yes, it was Jake Plummer.
It was still Plummer.
Yeah, Jake Plummer.
And Cutler was a rookie.
Yes, believe so.
That last game.
Last time they played.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Belichick traditionally has done well against quarterbacks that have never faced his defenses before. That's another reason why.
Yeah, but he's a Vandy boy. He's a smart guy.
He definitely is, and he's playing better now that he's found out about his illness and is treating it.
Mm-hmm.
Diabetes.
Yeah, how about that? That's another. I apologize for jumping in, but I just wanted to bring up the point that here's a guy that is playing and excelling at what he does with type 1 diabetes, and I think that's a tremendous credit to him and to diabetics really everywhere. It shows you that you can do it.
Yeah, and he, if you heard his conference call with the New England media the other day,
We'll be hearing later on this program.
I think he even admitted such, but he's kind of getting sick of answering those questions. about his diabetes.
It's because the sickness has become the focus,
rather than how he's playing.
I think what he needs to do is he needs to kind of turn that around a little bit and use himself as, you know, I'm up on a pedestal for diabetics, you know, everywhere, for people with a disease, and I can show them that, hey, you can manage this.
Yeah.
And I don't think he has quite the outlook like that just yet.
Well, it also could be that it's in season. You know, maybe that's an off-season thing.
Diabetes is who he is, you know? So, I mean, you know, just like, you know, professional athletes, I would argue professional athletes have to realize, if they haven't already, they realize that dealing with the media is part of the job.
Mm-hmm.
Comes with being a professional athlete. You've got to deal with the media. You have to learn how to like it. Whether you like it or not, you got to learn how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And whether he likes it or not, he's got to learn how to deal with diabetes. It's a part of his life, just like playing football is a part of his life.
Mm-hmm.
So I would argue it should go hand in hand.
Well, I'm just saying that if you listen to him, it sounds like he's getting tired of it.
Yep.
You know, so he's maybe it's getting
It's called maturity, Eric.
Oh, wow.
He's still a young guy.
It's
called maturity.
That's true.
Absolutely.
So that's another reason why I think maybe this game is coming at the right time. They're coming. The Patriots are coming off a loss.
Okay.
A very uncharacteristic loss. And they're playing a team that there are a lot of advantages, even though they're, you know, on paper it may look like this team always gives them trouble. I think this could be the right tonic for them at this point. But having said that, the Patriots still, I don't think, have the type of identity that they had at this point last year.
Right.
On either side of the ball.
Hmm.
On offense, I don't think they know if they're a 30-point scoring team.
No,
or,
they don't. They don't. It's very true.
Or on defense, if they can hold teams to that. You know, one week they do, another week they get burned by one particular play. And now that's happened twice in their two losses. They've gotten beat basically by one particular play. You know, against San Diego, it was just Rivers throwing the ball downfield to Jackson or Floyd or whoever was catching at that point. Against Miami, it was Ronnie Brown running his Razorback offense over there. But then against other teams like
Wildcat offense.
Wildcat, yeah, sorry.
Although the Razorbacks used it pretty well with Darren McFadden, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't think this team really has figured itself out yet.
No, they haven't. That's definite. And
we're getting close to the midpoint of the season.
You'd like to think that this team would begin to get some kind of an identity when you get to this point of the season, and we haven't had it. So that's where a positive performance could go a long way on Monday.
Yeah.
A negative performance, and this team is going to be doubting itself even more.
Yeah.
We're kind of arriving at I don't want to say a point of no return, but we're arriving at a distinctive point in the season where, you know, if this team continues to struggle for a few weeks, you know, the playoffs are definitely going to be in jeopardy.
I think we talked about it a few weeks ago, maybe when Russell was on. The first quarter of the season, the first four games, you get a sense of where your team is headed.
Sure.
By week eight, the midway point,
you pretty much know
what kind of team you have.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the third quarter of the season, you know whether or not you're going to be in the playoffs,
right,
or at least
week six.
Week six for the Patriots.
Right.
Week seven
overall.
Overall,
right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But we're getting close to that week eight point where you kind of have to know what kind of team you are, and I don't think they really know that right now.
Yep. So it's a crucial point of the season. Speaking of Russell, he's going to join us coming up here in about 10 minutes or so. In the meantime, we're rocking and rolling here and scatter shooting on a lot of different subjects, but we certainly are taking a look at the Patriots and the Denver Broncos here at Gillette on Monday night. If you want to join in the conversation, if you have some questions, fire away. webradio@patriots.com is the email address. We want your predictions for Monday night. I mean, I know you guys did your predictions, but you know what? You know, heck with you. I want to know what the people think. I want to know what fans think, right? Because generally, I think that you get a pretty good idea what the temperament is out there amongst people in terms of what their expectations are for the game when they do predict, right? So fire off with your Monday night predictions here score-wise. webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. We'll pause here for a timeout. Eric Scalavino from PFW with us here inside the playbook.
We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. both served on multigrain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Well, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, First Down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, First Down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Super League Championship in the history books, the Revs are making another run in an MLS Cup Championship. Don't miss their playoff push at Gillette Stadium with the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack. With the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack, you'll get two tickets to one of the Revs' final matches of the season and a pair of Budweiser Revolution pint glasses free. That's two tickets, two pint glasses, and one chance to cheer on the Revolution at Gillette Stadium with playoff implications on the line. Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack start at just $38. Take in a Revs match, and you'll take home a matching pair of Revolution pint glasses free. Must be 21 or older to participate. Call the Revolution ticket office at 1-877-GET-REVS or log on to revolutionsoccer.net for tickets, game information, and everything else New England Revolution.
What a goal! Taylor Twellman!
Pride.
The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet.
Passion.
Oh my goodness! Michael Parkhurst, are you kidding me?
Revolution.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Well, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from...
Welcome back inside the playbook for a Thursday. John Rook with Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly. Russell Baxter, NFL research coordinator for ESPN, will be joining us here momentarily. In the meantime, webradio at patriots.com is how you reach us on the program. Score predictions for Monday night. Let's go. Get to it. What do you think? What did you pick, by the way?
I picked New England. I think it'll be close for most of the game. I think they'll end up winning by a touchdown.
By a touchdown?
Yeah.
So, like what, 27-20?
It might be back.
28-21? What? Got to pick a score.
I'll go. Yeah, 27-20 sounds good.
Okay. All right. I know Paul said 27-24 Patriots.
Yeah.
I heard that one. Right now, I'm going the other way. I say 27-24 Broncos.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
It'll be a game that will be gettable for the Patriots. Winnable game. Should be able to keep it close, I'm thinking, simply because they're coming back home. But like I explained to you earlier here in the program, until I actually see it, it's going to be hard for me to go the other way. So I guess I'm a little bit more. I think they're going to fall to 3-3. That doesn't mean though that I don't think that I think the season's over. You know, get well against St. Louis. You know, I think they'll find a way to at least be competitive, if not win at Indy. Believe it or not, just because I think it's Indy,
and they're having their struggles this year.
Right, although they got well in a hurry last week.
They looked good last week against Baltimore.
You mentioned, Eric, that the PFW mailbag has been getting still a lot of...
Inundated.
A lot of emails about putting in O'Connell over Castle.
It's
Why
ridiculous.
Are people still haranguing on that? Have we not satisfied their appetite for... you know, the quarterback controversy by trying to diffuse that as best as possible?
I think what fans... When you get a guy... like O'Connell, who was a high draft pick, day two, but because of the third round. But that's still a pretty high pick. First three rounds, you're a high pick.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't drafted a guy that high at that position since Bledsoe, I believe. When you have a situation like that, and the kid was raved about in the lead up to the draft, all during the combine process. His stock rose continuously up until the Patriots took him. He was a four-year starter at San Diego State. He was a four-year captain at San Diego State. Versus Castle's situation, where he's been here for a few years. We've seen what he can do. Fans, you know, it was mostly in the preseason, but what we've seen in the regular season has not been much different than what we've seen from him in past preseasons. So I think when you combine those two, I think fans kind of are, you know, and with Brady out, they're figuring, hey, we know what we have already with Castle. Let's see what we have with O'Connell. They don't really know what they've got. And what little they have seen of him, he's come in and thrown touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Granted, it was against third-teamers at the end of the game. But
against scrubbers, yeah.
But that's what people's impressions are, is that this kid has played, has experience, and can make plays. So I think that's, you know, people have gotten a little impatient because they've gotten a little spoiled with the team having won all these games in this decade. And I think... they're just desperate for something to give them a spark. And who's always the most popular guy on a football team, on a losing team? The backup quarterback.
Right.
The backup quarterback.
Backup quarterback, right.
And right now that backup is O'Connell. And I think people want something to give them hope. And I think they don't have
Zolak?
That. They think they don't have that with Castle, and I think they want to see the rookie do something.
I have to admit that I believe...
What's that?
Oh, Three Stooges? Oh, very good. Okay, that means that the third stooge has just joined the fray. I wouldn't take that. I would not take that sitting down, Russell.
Well, I am sitting down. And all right, yeah. Well, since Gary has lit the fire here,
yeah,
and I have little doubt that he's of the curly variety.
Well, I don't know. I guess you could say he's shaped like him a little.
Who's quiet, numbskulls? I'm broadcasting.
Who was your favorite stooge?
Oh, my favorite stooge, without a doubt, was Shemp.
Oh, very good. Eric?
The least known of them, huh?
Shemp?
Yeah, Shemp.
Yeah.
Yeah, Shemp.
You can call me Curly if you want, but Shemp was the worst stooge ever.
No, he was great. I loved him.
Shemp, by the way, will be starting for the Patriots this week since I managed to listen to the show for the last 3 minutes. I was a Larry guy, by the way.
Were you a Larry guy?
Oh, okay. Absolutely.
I think Curly. I'll go with Curly.
Quiet, numbskulls, yeah. I'm broadcasting.
That's right.
He was always angry.
He was,
Larry
yeah,
was always angry.
Yeah, angry about something.
Well, Larry got hit a lot.
Yeah, Larry was the one that got pounded
on. He did a lot.
He got wailed on quite a bit.
Wow.
You know, ABC did a made-for-TV movie about the Three Stooges, I want to say about 4 or 5 years ago, and, you know, everything that happened with
them. I saw that. Yeah, I saw the movie, yeah.
I mean, you know, the story itself is fascinating.
Yep.
To hear how they were just kind of forgotten and then managed to make a comeback and, you know, kind of get what they deserved and all the stuff that, you know, all the laughter and everything they brought to a lot of people. And they almost kind of went by the wayside, much like, you know, the sad story of, like, the Little Rascals and stuff like that.
That's true.
All those guys who disappeared. A lot of, you know, that, a lot of those early comedy acts who kind of, you know, just faded away and stuff. But if memory serves me correct, Mel Gibson is an enormous Three Stooges fan and always manages to get something in the Lethal Weapon movies, some reference to them.
Yep.
And somehow. It was kind of hard to get Larry, Curly, and Moe and Braveheart because they would have just kind of got bumped off.
And, you know, for my generation, growing up watching the Scooby-Doo cartoons,
right?
When there was an era when Scooby-Doo characterized celebrities of the time and put them in the cartoons.
Oh, absolutely.
And
the
Three Stooges made it.
Right. Well, I'd say one time or another there was a Stooges cartoon. I mean, they were enormously popular and stuff, and they went on forever, so.
All right. See, Gary's right on top of it today. Look at this.
He always is.
Scooby-Doo music and everything.
He's
Three Stooges music.
Professional producer back there.
Unbelievable. Just shocking. So, Russell, how are you?
I'm terrific. Interesting week around the National Football League, a.k.a. Dallas.
No kidding, huh?
Where everything just kind of landed.
Yep.
You know, if somebody wasn't leaving, somebody was coming in.
It seems like
and,
it, right?
And it really kind of the focal point and so on. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I will touch on that, but I wanted to at least first start with some of the Eric and I were jumping into. Fact is that we're still getting, and he in particular, because he does a lot of the answering of the Patriots Football Weekly mailbag, the emails and the regular mails that come in every week, and fans still want to see Kevin O'Connell as opposed to Matt Cassel at quarterback for the Patriots, and I noticed that, you know, your compatriot at ESPN, John Clayton, had a nice article on .com this week talking about how backup quarterbacks are certainly getting, you know, their due and their share of time. But unless, of course, your name is, Kerry Collins, they're not really having a lot of success.
No, listen, there's what you want and then there's what happens and stuff. And, you know, if you're going to refer back to, you know, last Sunday night and so on, for those people looking for Kevin O'Connell, I hope he can cover deep. That's all I'll say.
Yeah.
You know, really, when you go down 30.
Why didn't we think of that? I mean, if O'Neill can't do it, let's throw O'Connell back.
I saw a lot of long pass completions and I didn't see Matt Cassel at the back end of it.
No.
And, listen, I know, you know, a lot of angst and stuff. There was, you know, down there by the goal line and, you know, they didn't get in and so on. But, you know, that's not really, I think, where the game was lost and so on. You know, a couple weeks ago.
That was one aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like John said earlier, you can't put all the blame on Cassel for the way they've played.
Mm-mm. No, you can't. Listen, you can never put it all on one person unless, you know, they go into a game and commit 10 turnovers and stuff. I mean, that's why football is the way it is and so on. You just can't. And if someone is playing horrendously, you yank them the heck out of there and so on. But I don't think that was the case. I think, you know, San Diego came out and, you know, made some big plays and they put the Patriots back on their heels very, very early. And then it became a different football game. The week before it was the Patriots who put the 49ers kind of on their heels and stuff. So, I mean, there's a lot of ebb and flow that goes in with football, as you well know and so on. And, you know, after the Jets game is, you know, Matt Cassel is doing just enough. And then suddenly 2 or 3 weeks later, we want Kevin O'Connell. So, you know, welcome to
fans
not having your regular quarterback for the season.
And fans are as fickle as they come.
Well, listen, you know, a couple more weeks, they'll want Manny Ramirez back to play quarterback. So,
yeah, why not? By the way, just for those that want to keep score, and Russell, I know you're probably aware of these numbers. Last year in the NFL, 63 different quarterbacks around the league got starts. That sounds accurate to you?
Yeah, I'm going to double check that. I have my own little handy-dandy
chart that I do on that, as a matter of fact.
63? Are we close?
Oh, I know you're close. It's either 62 or 64, actually.
64, okay.
64, and 21 different teams
okay.
started at least two quarterbacks.
All right.
And I know last year, I want to say it was maybe 9 or 10 started 3 and 2. Carolina and San Francisco started 4.
Wow. So you're averaging two quarterbacks per team. Pretty much.
Yeah, this
pretty
year.
Much.
This
and that's
year.
Keeping in mind that Brett Favre and Peyton Manning and Brady and Tom Brady
played all their
were
season.
On
played.
There last year
yeah,
and didn't
right.
miss a game. And guys like, you know, Drew Brees and Carson Palmer.
So that was a lot.
It
was,
yeah, Eli Manning. You know, those are, I think going into the year, those are the top six active streaks.
Okay.
You know, and of course, you know, two of those guys have ended. You know, Brady, of course,
yeah.
and Carson Palmer,
mm-hmm.
who was a steady starter, is now
mm-hmm.
been in and out of the lineup. So,
well, this week through 6 weeks, it's 43.
Correct.
With 11
with
backups
10, I have
getting
10.
Starts. Okay.
I have 10. Well, I was putting 10 teams.
10 teams
starting two or more, and of course, Kansas City has started 3.
Right. So, I mean, you're not even halfway through the season, and you're more than halfway to the number of quarterback
absolutely.
Starts from last year.
Yeah. Welcome to the battle of attrition called the NFL.
And there aren't that many great quarterbacks to replace.
That's what it is, yeah. I mean, if you're, like Eric's about to say, it's already a dearth of quarterback play and you can't keep them healthy, what are you supposed to do?
and we want to change again? I mean,
yeah.
You know, I spent quite a bit of time yesterday talking to a good friend of both of ours now, Russell, Ron Jaworski.
Yes, I think, Jaws.
Yes, you know Jaws.
The ultimate football ambassador.
He really is. And I asked him, I said, look, you know, we're still talking about Castle around here. So I said, could you please tell us what you honestly think of Matt Castle? And he thought, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but that Matt Castle was clearly the best and really only option the Patriots had at quarterback other than Brady. He said, and of course, Castle's going to pay a lot of comparison because you're, you know, you're comparing him to a guy who's going to be a surefire Hall of Famer.
Right.
You know, so he said, it's unfair to Castle.
And by the way, how long did it take for Tom to establish that career?
It took him pretty much that whole first year.
At least.
You know, after he had to pick up for Drew Bledsoe.
Right, at
I'd
least.
Say even longer. I'd say probably.
I would say even longer
the,
because.
They didn't make the
next year they didn't even make the playoffs.
Right.
That's
right.
Correct. They go off to a 3-0 start and wind up 9-7 and didn't make it.
Right.
And it took Bill Belichick about 6 or 7 years to finally have him run the style of offense, you know, which I think was why the Patriots played the way they played last year with letting Tom Brady really turn it over to him. You know, the thing has been the excellence of the Patriots during their 4 Super Bowl appearances is, you know, their style of play changed in every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that first Super Bowl team was really a defensive-oriented, special teams make plays. It got just enough key drives from Brady and just enough key kicks from Vinatieri to win. You know, they were, in 03, they bounced back. And they had just enough Antoine Smith to offset what Brady was doing. In 04, I thought they were perfectly balanced. You know, they had the power running of Corey Dillon, and they had the efficient passing of Brady. And, of course, last year, you know, they put up unprecedented numbers in style of offense. It's why they've stayed good as long as they have, because they're so hard to defense, because you never know what you're going to get with the New England Patriots and so on. But in order to run the style of offense that Tom Brady did last year and the trust that Bill Belichick had in him, it took him 6 or 7 years to develop that trust.
Mm-hmm.
We're asking for Matt Castle to all of a sudden become Tom Brady in the span of 4 weeks. Not going to happen.
No, not even with Tom Brady's
weapons. I know I'm really going on a limb with that statement. It's not going to happen.
No, it's definitely not.
The fans are panicking.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, but you got to, if you could read some of these emails, I can't even repeat some of the things.
I'm sure you can't.
But
I'm sure you are. They cut out from magazine letters and newspapers and like taped to a piece of paper?
Yeah. You will find Mr. Castle stuffed in a closet. Yeah.
Right?
And people are just, they're hitting the panic button. I mean, it's, you know, we're getting to that point where we have to figure out what kind of team we have, but it's not all on his shoulders. It's for the way they're playing. It's not all Castle's fault,
right.
You know. I mean, I'd love to see. I would really like to see O'Connell get some more reps in meaningful games and at meaningful points in the game. But you know, until Castle really shows that he can't operate the offense, and that hasn't been the case. He's played decently. He hasn't been Tom Brady. Hardly anybody in the league is. But until he proves that he's losing games for them,
right.
I think you have to try to continue to go with who you think is the best guy. And if that's him, that's him. And if that team ends up 8-8 or 9-7, well, you don't have Tom Brady. You knew it wasn't going to be 16-0 again.
Mm-hmm.
But fans are panicking up here.
Well, with good reason. I mean, I understand the panicking because of the success that you've had as a franchise, unprecedented success as of late. But the bottom line is you lost not only the MVP, but the Offensive mm-hmm. Player of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
And you lost him in the, basically the first quarter of the season. Very first quarter of the season. And that, there's just not much you can do about it. You can't all of a sudden plan for a season and then it's suddenly going to turn out. Unfortunately for Patriots fans, they still have visions of their season when Tom Brady came in and think it can be duplicated.
Well, here's the thing. We'll never know the answer to this, obviously, but I wonder if the reaction would have been the way it's been so far if the Patriots had beaten the Giants in the Super Bowl.
That's a great question.
It is. It is.
That's a great question.
And I would answer by saying, no, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Because I think there's more of that feeling of desperation to win another Super Bowl.
Yep.
Because they didn't win last year,
yep.
and they didn't finish off that historic
yep,
season.
They
if
didn't
they
finish
had,
it off.
If they had, it would have been a clear-cut team of the decade, four Super Bowls, undefeated season.
I agree.
All right, you knew they were going to have a letdown.
And we lost our quarterback in week one,
right.
You know, maybe that's just the end. Yeah,
right.
I mean, yeah, that's a great question.
I think it might have softened the blow a little bit, but I mm-hmm. think because they didn't, and Bruschi came back, and Vrabel and Harrison came back, and everyone was saying, hey, we're gonna make another run, we still got enough juice left. And then Brady goes out. I think people are really desperate. Fans, at least, are more desperate than they
would
have been.
Sure,
I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Well,
to
because
me.
The sky has fallen in on them ever since
right.
February.
Ever
right.
since that game, yeah.
It's yeah.
very true. I tried to explain it yesterday. I think it's just the law of averages catching up with fans of New England sports teams.
Could be.
Red Sox yeah. notwithstanding right. tonight. So,
right.
you know, I mean, it could be just.
Good thing
know.
The Celtics won it last year.
Yeah,
right?
No kidding, huh? No kidding.
Maybe Ray Allen can play quarterback.
Maybe the Revs can pull it off this year.
Yeah.
Finally.
Don't hold your breath, right? There are a couple of games that I'm really looking forward to watching on Sunday, and one of them is San Diego at Buffalo. Very intriguing for a lot of obvious reasons. Buffalo
Chargers.
On top of the. Yeah, Buffalo's on top of the division, sure. But, yeah, I wouldn't know why you wouldn't be a Charger fan for this particular game because it directly helps New England. But I think a lot of people will be interested to see how Buffalo compares, even though they get San Diego at home, to what happened to the Patriots last week. Don't you think, Russell?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you know, San Diego, you know, one week they're getting shackled by the Dolphins in Miami, and then a week later they're blowing out New England. Unpredictability has really been a big part of them this year, and a lot of it has to do with the erratic play of their defense. And I know they lost Sean Merriman this year. That almost seems like it's forgotten because he played week one, and then, you know, we haven't heard from him since. But up and down, they've been a really, really tough team to gauge. And, you know, when you look at Phillip Rivers, who, you know, really has emerged as a real tough guy quarterback. I mean, I think a lot of people gained a lot of respect for him last year, been playing injured in the AFC Championship game. I think up until then, you know, and you have those visions of that game against Denver where he's kind of mouthing off to Jay Cutler across mm-hmm. the field. And I think that kind of put him in a bad light. And then you just realize that it's more about his fire and he's not about just being a, you know, lack of a better word, a smart ass. Mm. He's a real fiery guy.
Oh, yeah. And when he left, and against the Colts, when they beat the Colts, he was mouthing
absolutely,
off.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think there was just, you know, he kind of, for people not knowing, including myself, because you're only watching on TV, he almost kind of rubbed you the wrong way. And then yet, I think since then, you kind of understood what he's really, really kind of all about and stuff. But that being said, this is a very unpredictable San Diego team. Mm-hmm. You know, Buffalo's had a couple weeks to think about getting, you know, smacked around in Arizona. And granted, they lost Trent Edwards on the third play of the game.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden,
without him.
You know, listen, it's been a rough, let's put it this way. Going to Arizona has been rough on quarterbacks. Okay. The last two guys, you know, who started the game, you know, got hurt there. You know, Edwards and now Tony Romo, and we'll talk about that later as well. But this is almost a tough call. You know, you watch LaDainian Tomlinson run, and guys, I don't know if you agree with me. There just seems like there's still that little bit of hesitation with him.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's got the toe injury, and you know, people say toe, but you know that turf toe / dislocated toe. That you know, when you try to plant, you can't cut.
Yeah.
And you saw that last week a lot of times. You've seen it every week with LT. He just doesn't seem like he doesn't have that burst. He doesn't have that cut. He doesn't have that explosion. You know, when you see him go around the corner now, you think he used to be he was gone. Now you think someone's going to catch him.
Well, you know, that's what's kind of surprised me about what Bill said his game plan was going into that San Diego game, that they wanted to take Tomlinson away. And it kind of surprised me because what you said, he'd been nicked up. They knew that. He didn't have that extra step that he's had before. And you already knew that San Diego's receiving core was a little bit nicked up, too. Why not try to take the big play away from Rivers? Why not try to go after Rivers and take away the only other option? They instead focused on Tomlinson, who already wasn't a full 100% to begin with. But that was their main concern, it seemed.
Well, what was interesting, you said about the Chargers receiving corps getting nicked up, and that was true because he didn't have Chris Chambers. But they did get Malcolm Floyd back.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Floyd, like Vincent Jackson, are bigger receivers. And, you know, especially Floyd, who you really saw that height advantage over anybody.
Caught touchdowns, right.
Yeah. You know, I don't think there's any question about it. You saw the games you saw him play last year. You know, he's one of those guys you can not like Plexico Burress, but it's, you know, the style of guy who can literally reach up and catch a pass a lot of times where he doesn't necessarily have to jump up off his feet to catch the ball. And you know, that can be pretty undaunting for an undersized DB. But, I mean, you know, they didn't get a lot of heat on Philip Rivers last week. You know, the Chargers nibbled them and yet then also had the big play against them as well and so on. They just put a lot of pressure on them last week. And it'll be interesting to see if San Diego's able to do the same thing to Buffalo because Buffalo has got, an above-average set of defensive backs.
Above-average. Above average, yes.
Yes.
Baltimore at Miami. I have to admit, I am surprised that Baltimore has struggled the way they have. Maybe some of their quarterback issues are causing them to be as inconsistent as they are. And obviously, we've talked a little bit about how Miami is somewhat surprising. But are you not at least a little bit disappointed? Is not the right word. Confused, maybe, is a better word by Baltimore's performance thus far at 2-3.
Well, I mean, they got off to the good start against, Cleveland and Cincinnati. And now they've kind of more hit the meat of some, formidable teams, obviously. But more so is you're now starting to get a little bit of a book on what Joe Flacco can do and, more importantly, can't do. I think the other thing that has hurt them is they really haven't had that consistent running game with Willis McGahee being in and out of the lineup. Like the fullback LaRon McClain is leading the team in rushing. He's a good goal line guy and so on, but you're not seeing him getting it 20, 25 times a game. And that can't help any quarterback, be it a rookie quarterback or an experienced quarterback. Last week the Colts came out and, you know, really hit them right in the mouth and so on, really challenged them deep. Got some big plays. And then once it was, you know, once the Ravens got behind and you had Dwight Freeney and Robert Mathis teeing off on young Joe Flacco, you knew it was going to be a bad afternoon for that guy. And hence, you know, the struggles of a rookie quarterback. But I think there's just a lot of pieces missing with Baltimore right now. They're not a complete team. They're not a complete healthy team. And I think for them to challenge in the AFC North, they need more pieces healthy. The defense looks pretty solid. Again, didn't have a great game last week. But, you know, they need a healthy running game to offset the inexperience of Flacco.
Yep, yep. And then the other divisional opponent, Jets playing at Oakland. And the Jets are 3-2, so the Jets are certainly going to make a play for perhaps the top of the division as soon as this week. Is this a game that seems to be winnable for them on the road, you think?
Well, you would think so. On a kind of two mini historical notes here, you know, when you think Jets Oakland, what do you think of, John?
Oh, gosh, I think of a lot of things.
It'll be 40 years.
But I think, about 1960, what? What
year was it? 68. The Heidi
Eight?
Game.
The Heidi game. That's right. 68?
Yep.
That's right. 68.
68. And, of course, these teams then met later in the AFL championship game.
That's right.
The Jets won the Super Bowl that year.
Could we ask for NBC to play, you know, Heidi today just for old time's sake?
I think they're going to do the Heidi Fleiss story, as a matter of fact. Just kind of bring a more modern
story. Well, that is a CBS game on Sunday, so maybe we ought to ask CBS to interrupt.
Well, I hope someone just shows the end of it. I hope we just don't lose it. You know, of course, this is also Brett Favre's return to Oakland. The last time Brett, of course, played in Oakland was that, you know, for lack of a better word, fabled Monday night game the day after his father died and blitzed the Raiders for almost 400 yards. And, one of the more emotional games you'll ever see in the standpoint of, you know, an athlete really overcoming some personal tragedy. But modern text, the Raiders last week who, you know, really played one for Tom Cable in New Orleans last week. Hip, hip, hooray, 34-3.
Yeah.
And looked a little lifeless in doing so. I'm telling you, for all the problems that Al Davis supposedly or did have with Lane Kiffin, in the 20 games he was there, the Raiders were a competitive football team. I know they were 5-15, but if you watched how they played, they might not have the bodies, but at least they played for Lane Kiffin.
Yeah.
I didn't see the Raiders playing for Tom Cable last week. They looked very dysfunctional. And the Jets did just enough. They didn't get a lot out of Brett last week. They got 3 touchdowns from Thomas Jones. Brett threw a couple of interceptions. I don't think it was one of his finer outings and so on. But, you know, this is a game, if the Jets are going to stay in the AFC East race, you can't go across the country and let one get away from you. They should beat the Raiders. They've beaten the last 3 times they played them. But as we found out last week in this league, a.k.a. Rams Redskins, a.k.a. Browns Giants,
right.
And take your pick with a few others. There are no gimmies. I don't care what the other record is. You know, Kansas City and Denver, we found that out a couple of weeks ago. So in this league, when you're expected to win, sometimes that's harder than the game where you're not expected to win.
Boy, who in their right mind would want to take that Raiders coaching job when it comes up again?
Eric, I think you hit the nail right on the head.
My God.
Right mind.
Yeah. Who would
no one in the right
mind? Finding somebody with a wrong mind.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean,
I somehow see Marty Feldman with a jar with a brain named Abby Normal.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a wasted spot. Who's going to take that?
Well, by the way, what's the rumor going on around there about Madden and rejoining the front office in Oakland? Oh, my God. Is that true?
Maybe that's why he didn't make the trip this week.
Holy cow. That's what we were talking about on the previous show, was that you know, he might be offered something in the front office. He might as well go on the field.
No kidding. He certainly could.
He might as well go on the sideline.
He might as well. I mean, I'd be completely dumbfounded by that one.
So would I, but I know this right now. Right now, more people have won with the Madden video game than the Raiders have won the last 5 years.
That's also true.
But you know what? He might be the only person who could take over that coaching job and not have it be a distraction to the players or to him as the coach.
Okay, but how long has it been since he's coached?
I know, but
30 years?
Davis might not mind. He might not mind if that were the case.
Yeah, it's been 30 years.
When did he retire, Russell?
His last year,
79?
78 was his last year, I believe.
Good grief.
Tom Flores took over in 79 and then won the Super Bowl in 80.
Exactly 30 years.
That's only twice as long as Dick Vermeil took off when he came back and won the Super Bowl with the Rams, right?
Yeah, that's very correct.
Yeah.
Wow. That would be a shocker if there ever was one.
Well, maybe that's why he stayed behind this week. He didn't make the trip to
could be.
To Tampa for the maybe he's going over the rosters.
Wow.
And looking for Phil Villapiano, wondering why he's not there.
You know, it's been such a circus, it wouldn't surprise me if that's what ends up happening.
You mentioned earlier, Russell, when we got started here, about the week that it has been for the Dallas Cowboys, and here's a team that you know, could be seeing themselves begin that downward spiral as well, although they got to go play at St. Louis this week. St. Louis did get their first win of the year last week. How are the Cowboys going to be able to hold this together? Because it does seem like things like the screws are loosening, you know, on you know, from the training wheel, so to speak.
Well, I mean, you have the Adam Jones saga. You have rookie Felix Jones, who's going to miss a month. Now, you lost a punter last week in the overtime game. He's out for the season, former Pro Bowl punter Matt McBryer.
Mm-hmm.
You lost a wide receiver in Sam Hurd. You gained a wide receiver because now that you're getting rid of Joneses, you are stocking up on Roy Williamses in on your team.
How are they going to work the jerseys out? The name.
I think there'll be an E and an L. There's a Roy E and a Roy L, I believe.
That would be great. Have an entire name on the back of a jersey.
I think
you
should name it. Change the name.
Yeah.
One of it, I think the simpler solution would just change the name to Roy Rogers, which would be, you know, much
singing
makes
Cowboys.
Sense, at least being a cowboy
yeah,
and so
right.
on. So yeah. That was a long way to go for a bad joke.
It was.
Yeah.
That's okay.
But
you're allowed.
We appreciate it.
And now Tony Romo. But, you know, Tony Romo, let's see. I mean, I believe he is throwing the football the last 2 days. And it's not set in stone that he's not going to play
now
this Sunday at St. Louis.
Did he call Brett Favre or did Brett Favre call him? I'm hearing.
I think the story was that
reports.
Brett called him.
Why is he doing that then, if that's the case?
Well, I think there's a admiration that goes on with Tony and Brett and so on. I think that's simply a case. And you almost read between the lines in saying, okay, so you got a broken pinky. I don't know if Brett was more encouraging or more pep talk of, hey, if you can play, you need to play. You know, I played with a lot of stuff and so on. And I think, I don't think Brett makes that phone call to necessarily any other quarterback. And I know there's been a lot of discussion about Aaron Rodgers being banged up. Why didn't Brett call him? I think it's because, you know, Romo, the stories of Romo idolizing Favre. And listen, I'm sure there are other quarterbacks that idolize Favre, but they happen to have a relationship. And hey, that stuff goes on all the time. People, you know, when Troy Aikman was the Dallas Cowboys quarterback and North Turner had left, okay, They talked to each other, even though North Turner was the head coach of the Washington Redskins. Okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think it was any surprise that North Turner was the person who inducted Troy Aikman into the Pro Football Hall of Fame when he went in a couple of years ago? He didn't ask Michael Irvin or Emmitt Smith or Jimmy Johnson or Jerry Jones. He asked North Turner.
But is it wise to make those kind of conversations public?
I don't know if that was necessarily, you know, I don't know. Everything becomes public now, whether you like it or not, unfortunately, and so on. And in some ways, I think if it wasn't public, who knows what life it would have taken on its own. So I'm not reading too much into it.
I just think it's a little odd that, you know, the
I'm not saying it's not unusual, Eric, and so on. I think it'd be more unusual if the Jets were playing the Cowboys this week. Then I'd really think it was unusual. Mm. But I think because there's a little admiration society thing that goes on there. Mm. You know, I'm not going to get too hyped up about it, to be honest with you. But we'll see what happens. Let's see if Tony plays.
I did find it odd, like Eric kind of alluded to here.
It is odd. Yeah, it is odd because. If you think about it and you think about the competitive nature of football in general, and God, has it changed from 30 years ago when, you know, some guys didn't even help the other guy up. Now it's, you know, it's more the players look out for each other than ever before. And I'm not saying that's a wrong thing, but it's certainly different than it was 20, 30 years ago when it was much more intense and so on. Now it's more of a business even for the players as well. So I don't disagree with that, but I mean, as far as the after effects go, it'd be different if they were, if the Packers and the Cowboys were playing this week and Brett called Tony to give him some inside stuff on the Packers, then I think I'd be.
Yeah,
no kidding. I got you.
The antenna would really be up.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
And I'm sure, listen, he told him that, listen, wash it out. Spray some unguentine on it.
Unguentine? Okay. Oh, man, you are
wow.
You are throwing back here, pal.
I did that on purpose.
No kidding. Hey, one other game that I wanted to touch on before we get to the big one was Indianapolis at Green Bay. Did we see more of the real Colts team, or at least the Colts team that, you know, we all thought maybe it could be last week?
Well, I think it's the Colts team that's trying to get familiar with each other. They accepted the fact that they're not going to play with Bob Sanders for a while. That being said, now all of a sudden they're going to be a different team again because Joseph Addai is going to be out for a couple of weeks with a partially torn hamstring. Mike Hart, the rookie from Michigan, one of their backup running backs, he's out for the year with a hamstring injury as well. So a blast from the past who they got before the year started, Dominique Rhodes.
Yeah.
Dominique.
Yeah, yeah.
Not Dominic.
Not Dominic.
We could only play for the
Dominique
Colts,
Rhodes will have to carry the load against a Green Bay team that got itself back on kilter last week after winning at Seattle. And, you know, the last time these two teams played was 4 years ago, and I know you guys will remember it. It was a shootout between Manning and Favre. And Javon Walker had a big day for the Packers, 45-31 at Indianapolis. Of course, now Walker and Favre are both gone. Indy's gone. But I'll tell you one thing. If Aaron Rodgers has not proven that he's a pretty good quarterback, and I know there's a long way to go. He's only six games into the season. The guy has been tough. The guy has played hurt. The guy is not only been pretty accurate, but, you know, the Packers' running game, which has been virtually non-existent, okay, they have four rushing touchdowns this year. Three of them are by Aaron Rodgers. One of them are by Brian Grant has not scored a touchdown. this year. And that was, you know, the, you know, a big holdout, hamstring injury, yada, yada. You know, where the Packers have really failed themselves this year is their offense and defensive lines have not played that well. They've had terrible time trying to stop the run. Mm-hmm. It's put more pressure on the offense. You know, in the games that Aaron Rodgers has lost, he's been sacked a lot. So this is a team that is not, a team that's not living up to snuff. And you can make the case the only guy who is really exceeding expectations in Green Bay right now is the guy everybody was the most worried about, and that's Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, yeah, great point. Great point. All right, we've touched on last week's opponent with the Patriots. We've even touched on next week's opponent, the Rams. We looked at all the division opponents that are playing games this week, and we have yet to talk about this week itself. So it's the Burger Biggie on Monday night, the ESPN Monday night game. The Patriots back here at home at Gillette against the Denver Broncos. And, of course, Denver comes in leading the West at 4-2, but they, too, are coming off of a loss after losing 24-17 to Jacksonville last week. And, you know, what's your take, and what are your compatriots there, you know, in your neck of the woods at ESPN, Russell? What are your thoughts on, all of a sudden, the last three games, Denver finding it really hard to put points on the board after starting off the first three games, you know, like gangbusters?
Yeah, I want to say, 34 or more in each of the first three games, less than 20 in the last three games.
That's correct.
Okay?
Yeah.
So, a lot of that has, I think, to do with the fact that, even when they were winning, their defense was not playing very well. And now teams are learning that even though if you fall behind, which this is what I love about the coaches who really get it, even if you're down 14-0 or 21-0, if the opposition can't stop the run, don't stop running. That's how you will eventually get back into the game. And Denver is not very stout on the defensive line. They don't rush the passer overly well. They don't stop the run very well, even in the games they won. So they have a lot of defensive issues. And Jacksonville went into their building last year and pushed them around. And Jacksonville, coming off a loss to Pittsburgh, went out to Denver and did it a second straight year. I mean, Maurice Jones, you know, it's not a good thing. If you remember this, the one touchdown Maurice Jones Drew had last week, the long, I think, 46-yarder, mm-hmm. He had two Denver defenders racing, you know, trying to chase him into the end zone. And Troy Williamson, the one-time Viking wide receiver who now plays for Jacksonville, actually beat the two Denver defenders who were chasing Maurice Jones-Drew into the end zone as well. So when your defensive guys can not only not catch the ball carrier, but I can't catch the blocker, who is the trailing blocker, then you've got some problems defensively. And, you know, depending on how New England plays this, they should be able to control the ball against the Denver defense. Now, defensively for New England, they're going to have to play better than they played, you know, against Miami, against last week as well. There's no doubt that Denver can put points on the board in certain situations. But the problem is if they do start getting behind and get into a back-and-forth game, that's when Denver's going to get himself in trouble. And Brandon Marshall's a big physical receiver. Hopefully for them, they have Eddie Royal back this week. Hopefully for them, they have Tony Scheffler back this week. But I think the best way to offset Jay Cutler and that big strong arm is to keep Denver's offense off the field. And I think with that way, Denver's defense has played. And that's been, it's been steady. Okay, you know, I think probably their best defensive game was against Tampa Bay. And that's when Brian Greasy got hurt and suddenly they were playing against Jeff Garcia. But they haven't stopped the run all year. I think, you know, I'm not sure what's going on with Lawrence Maroney up there. I'm sure that's been a topic of discussion with you guys.
Oh, yeah.
And so on. But Sammy Morris, Lamont Jordan, if he is playing this week, I'm not sure of his health status as well. I know he's had some injury problems on and off. That stable of big backs, that's just the kind of tonic that would be bad news for a Denver defense that, again, not great on the defensive line and not very good against the run.
Here's what scares me the most, though, about the Patriots going against Denver's defense. And while Denver certainly looks to be a defense that could be susceptible to giving it up, fact is that a lot of defenses now are kind of squatting on the Patriots because the majority of their passes are in the flat. They're under 10 yards. And so
Right. Teams
can sit there and play 8 in the box or 9 in the box in any, you know, for any particular reason. And the Patriots are thrown right into their weakness. The Patriots can't stretch the field, and they can't go up the middle right now. And so that's why, until I see it, I'm just not sure the Patriots can do it.
Well, I think the Denver defense is there for the taking. It's just a matter of the style of football that New England plays if they're going to take it. I don't think they want to come out here and play the wide open type of thing. against Denver's defense because they do have some respectable defensive backs, and you know they have good linebacker in DJ Williams and so on. So depending on how they, you know, want to attack them that way. But I just think a steady dose. It might be boring, you know, but I know Bill Belichick at times will throw the ball 25 times a game, or 25 consecutive times like he did, you know, a couple of years ago on a Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
What's the saying he can't come up and just run the ball the entire time? Because I'll tell you, that would get Denver on its heels. And if that, you know, if they start getting to Denver very, very early, that's where the play-action passing and the deep passes will open up as the safeties and the DBs start crowding the line.
Right. I also think that on defense, the Patriots have to get in Cutler's face. Even if they don't sack him, they have to do what they did to O'Sullivan.
Absolutely.
In
it's not always about the sacks. It's a lot of times,
yeah.
You know, when the Giants, great stat, when the Giants beat Tampa last year in their first playoff game, you know, en route to their Super Bowl run, they only sacked Jeff Garcia, Erica, one time in that game.
Mm-hmm.
They hit him 11 times.
Yeah, rattle him. Got to throw him off.
They hit him 11 times. He went down 11 mm-hmm. times. You know, that was about a third of his attempts where he went down on the ground mm-hmm. and so on. That's really what you want to do. You know, it doesn't always have to be a sack. Sometimes sacks are great, but sometimes sacks can be deceptive. Mm-hmm. If you're getting enough heat and you don't get to the quarterback, but you get an arm in his face and that ball goes to the DB, that's not a sack, but it's probably a touchdown the other way.
Mm-hmm. Let me also bring up one other matchup that I think was probably will see some time on Monday night. And, again, part of the reason why I'm concerned from a Patriots perspective is Randy Moss, I'm guessing, is going to see some time against Champ Bailey. Now, I don't know, depending on the line side of the football, I don't know if you're Denver, why you wouldn't want to put Champ against Moss since nobody has been throwing against Champ Bailey defensively this year. I don't think you're going to put Dre Bly up against him. And plus, if you put Champ Bailey up against him, you probably can get away with single coverage where you can go help out elsewhere. And again, that just cuts off another opportunity for the Patriots.
Yeah, you know, and Champ Bailey, as outstanding as he is, will have those lapses where it seems like you can't throw at him, John, and then on the other hand, you could spend a whole night throwing at him. And depending on, you know, how the early jousting goes, you know, it all it takes is one or two of those. You know, when you're attacking a defense sometimes, there's that school of thought of pounding them, and then there's also that school of thought, well, let's just go long right away and see what they're made of.
That's what the Chargers did the other
night. And stretch
yeah.
things out,
yeah. Yeah.
You know? So there's one of two ways. You know, I think against Denver, I think the preference is probably to pound at them a little because they just haven't proven on a consistent basis that they can stop anybody from running. And then pick your time where you want to attack them long. With Moss, or even the tight end down the field or so on. I mean, we really haven't seen a lot of the tight end production at the Patriots this
Zero.
Year. And, you know, and,
Zero
and
production.
That, yeah, and that's, you know, that's kind of interesting because, you know, Ben Watson, I know he's been, you know, you guys know more about his health than I do. I mean, he's been
he
in
was
and
hurt
out
the first couple of weeks.
Bit.
First
right,
couple of weeks, but, and they've actually utilized him more in a blocking
right.
Scheme over the last few weeks because they felt like they've needed the help from the offensive line.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's the other thing to point out. And that shows you the beauty of Brady and the inexperience of Castle does. I believe the Patriots have given up 20 sacks already this year
mm-hmm.
in the regular season. They gave up 21 in the regular season last
All
year.
All of last year, that's
yeah.
right.
Okay. And, you know, is that offensive line? Is that inexperience? That's probably a combination of both. I would lean more toward the quarterback right now, and his own natural hesitancy based on his inexperience.
Mm-hmm.
So I certainly understand that. But, you know, a few carefully placed passes, to the tight end or, you know, or even, you know, I don't know. I think there's a certain way you can attack Denver. And listen, Mike Shanahan's kind of had Bill Belichick's number.
Oh,
over
yeah.
the years, but that was more when Brady was in there. You know, it sounds weird, but I want to say, what, 5-1 the last six times they played?
Yep. Yeah,
the Broncos include the playoff game and so on?
The only one they had was the one when
what was the it was the fabled,
Brady came back and
yeah.
threw
the fabled intentional
right.
safety game
intentional
on a Monday
safety.
Night.
That's correct.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
Yeah, Denver's won 5 out of the last 6, including the playoff game.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
But I watch Denver and you know, when they played San Diego this year, and I know that, you know, you don't even want to get into the details of that game because of the Hockley call and all that stuff. But Denver had a big lead. They squandered it. When you play defense the way Denver does, that erratically, you're really not safe no matter where you play. Listen, Larry Johnson exploited them a couple weeks ago. And I know, you know, Sammy Morris is not Larry Johnson. But, you know, maybe two backs can add up to Larry Johnson. I'm telling you, there's a way to beat Denver. and that's to pound them because they just haven't proven they can stop anybody.
Time will tell whether or not the Patriots have even the personnel groupings in order to attempt that very thing on Monday night.
A 2.5-hour game would be very advantageous to the New England Patriots.
Yeah, I think it would. It'd be advantageous to those of you, you know, covering the game and working the game too, wouldn't it?
Exactly.
Well, and those of us here at the stadium too, right?
That means a lot of fill time for Jaworski, and I don't know if I want to hear him talk that much.
Oh,
I love you, Judge. I know
that.
You're out there.
I don't mind that. I don't mind that. Now, do you get to make the trip to Foxborough, or do you have to stay in Bristol?
No. I'm back in Bristol. I do not travel with the Monday night crew, so I will not be up there. Actually, it's funny you said that because a friend of mine, I'm actually going down to our Monday night game in a couple weeks in Washington when the Steelers play, which is a rare road trip for me, but it's not work related. You know, I'm allowed to get out of the house once every 4 years.
Good for you.
It's election weekend, as a matter of fact.
Wow.
So I figure I'll just, while I'm there on Tuesday,
cast your vote.
I'll just stop by and shake hands with, you know, Sarah Palin.
Yeah, right.
And say, nice knowing you.
Nice. Yeah, exactly. Nice to meet you, Senator, or, you know, President Obama or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah, right. All right.
I figure instead of using the new sheet and the automated system, I'll just hand them a note and give them my vote.
There you go. That works.
I'll slip it under the door.
Works for me. Yeah. Russell, great to talk to you. Thanks for spending the time, as always. Take care, Russell.
Okay, guys. Enjoy Monday night.
Oh, you know it. We definitely will. We'll enjoy it a heck of a lot more if they win, I think, on Monday night.
Yeah, I would say
yeah,
so.
Absolutely.
Crowded AFC East makes it interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what will make it interesting. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
Scott, thanks. That's Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN. Chock full of the knowledge, as he always is. As he always is. All right, webradio@patriots.com. Got a couple of emails to share with you as well. Got some conference calls that we promised you as well that we'll try to get to here in the next half hour or so before we wrap up the program right here inside the playbook.
We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie, both served on multigrain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and Hot Sack Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, First Down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
The Super League Championship in the history books. The Revs are making another run in an MLS Cup Championship. Don't miss their playoff push at Gillette Stadium with the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack. With the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack, you'll get two tickets to one of the Revs' final matches of the season and a pair of Budweiser Revolution pint glasses free. That's two tickets, two pint glasses, and one chance to cheer on the Revolution at Gillette Stadium with playoff implications on the line. Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack start at just $38. Take in a Revs match, and you'll take home a matching pair of Revolution pint glasses free. Must be 21 or older to participate. Call the Revolution Ticket Office at 1-877-GET-REVS or log on to revolutionsoccer.net for tickets, game information, and everything else New England Revolution.
What a goal! Taylor Twellman!
Pride.
The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet.
Passion.
Oh my goodness! Michael Parkhurst, are you kidding me?
Revolution.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football.
Oh, yeah, we're doing football, that's for sure, around here. Inside the playbook for a Thursday here. I don't know about you kids, but our server's having some problems here, so I haven't gotten any emails in, like, the last hour, and the emails that I have all of a sudden are not readable or readable. I don't know, did they reboot the server or something? What was the, I don't know, who knows. So I apologize, profusely apologize for not being able.
I don't think it's Ferreira's fault, though, just to disclaim that.
Okay, all right, that's fine. Anyway, I apologize for not being able to read emails, but I can't even open them. In fact, it says here, active content cannot be displayed. Open the item, and when I try to open up the item, not responding. So at any rate, it looks like the server here needs a little reboot, and it may keep us from reading emails today, but undoubtedly I thank you anyway for sending them, and you know that we do read them, and they will stay here, so I'll read them maybe after the fact. So let's do this then. We've got our conference calls that we promised you from the Denver Broncos with members of the Patriots media. Up first will be Broncos head coach Mike Shanahan. You know, Shanahan is certainly, as Russell Baxter alluded to a short while ago, has had his you know, share of successes with the Patriots and with Bill Belichick in particular. In fact, the Broncos as a team overall, 9-2 against teams coached by Bill Belichick. Did you know that? That's right. Denver's 4-0 against Belichick when he was the head coach of the Browns from 91 through 95, and the Broncos are 5-2 against the Patriots under Coach Belichick from 2000 until now. So a 9-2 overall franchise record against Bill Belichick-coached teams. I don't know what that means to you, but it means that obviously somehow, some way, they've got their mark. And we should also tell you that the Broncos right now are the only team in the NFL with a winning record against New England in regular season and postseason play combined since 2001. When the Patriots won their first Super Bowl in 2001, since that time, the Broncos are the only team in the NFL with a winning record against New England in the regular season and postseason combined. They're 5-1 against the Pats. And the architect of it has been Mike Shanahan, and he did meet with members of the Patriots media.
Hello?
Hey, Mike. It's up here in New England with the New England Writers. How are you?
Good.
All right. Thanks for taking a few minutes for us.
No problem.
Yeah, look, just started out, just looking at your team. We always think about the Broncos with that great rushing attack, and here we see a high-flying passing attack. I'm sort of curious, is that a change, or how do you sort of see the offense evolving maybe from what we've seen from the past?
I don't know. By the end of the year, I think it'll be more balanced than you probably look at it right now from the statistical standpoint. Early teams are taking away the run, and then some teams start taking away the pass. So I don't think we'll ever change our philosophy. But right now, as you mentioned, we have thrown the ball more than we normally do.
How would you assess Jay Cutler's performance at this point?
Well, I think he's done an excellent job, you know, coming into his third year. You know, in our two losses we've had seven turnovers. You can't win football games, as we all know, and turn the football over. So we've got to get better in that area with fumbles and INTs. I've been pleased with his progress this year. We've thrown a lot at him relative to the playbook, and he's handled it quite well.
Jay just said that the sort of three-week scoring dip that you've had has been most the biggest problem has been turnovers. Would you agree with that, and how do you solve that?
Well, you know, ball, obviously turnovers, ball security, and in Kansas City we had four, and you know, at 450 yards, and you turn the ball down there, you don't get points. I think we had three against Jacksonville, and same thing. You hit the ball on the 5-6 yard line, the other side of midfield, and regardless of how much you move the football, you're not going to score points. So in Tampa, we played a little bit better, and we're able to win the game. We won the turnover battle on low-scoring games, so that's going to happen sometimes. But you just got to protect the ball. You know, New England's been great through the years, unbelievable when you look at the stats. And if they win the turnover ratio, they win. If you don't, you lose. And it's pretty indicative of most teams, but especially against a team that plays great defense.
How much does Jay's arm strength allow you to call plays that maybe you couldn't call if he didn't have that kind of a cannon?
Well, I think sometimes the arm strength is overrated. You know, a lot of these quarterbacks have, you know, really good arm strength. They can make all the throws, and, you know, sometimes, I've been around a lot of quarterbacks that get great arms that can't play the game. So it takes a lot more than arm strength, too, obviously, to be a great quarterback in this league.
Besides the physical strength of his arm, what's the key then for Jay? What do you like most about him?
Well, he reads coverages extremely well. You know, he focuses downfield, not at the rush. He's very competitive. You know, he's plays with a lot of confidence. He's got some speed. He can make plays if people are covered with his legs, and it's kind of what I look for in a quarterback.
Mike, I know you liked Lawrence Maroney quite a bit going into the draft. Are you surprised that he hasn't maybe put up the big year that a lot of people would have expected him to kind of have routinely coming into the league?
Yeah, you just don't know from the injury standpoint. You know, a lot of times you like a guy coming out of the draft, and for one reason or another, a guy gets banged up or injured, and they're not as productive as you first thought they would be, and mainly it's because of injuries. And I don't know, you know, Maroney's situation as well as you guys do, because you know we don't play each other every year, but when I first saw him, you could see the talent that he had, and I guess he's been hampered with injuries.
In Minnesota, what he did in Minnesota, were projected pretty well to what you guys do, right? As far as, you know, a lot of the outside zone stuff and playing with one cut.
Yeah, very, very, very similar to what we look for in a running back, correct.
How's Daniel Graham been, Mike, you know, since you guys signed him? I mean, has he sort of come as advertised? What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, he's been great for us. You know, he's a natural team leader. He's a great worker. He can dominate at the point of attack in the running game and pass protection. He does a good job receiving where, you know, you've got to count for him. And, you know, not too often you can leave a tight end on a defensive end and not worry about it. And Daniel's got that type of ability and pass protection. And, you know, at 250-something pounds, he can block the best of the outside linebackers in the league, and he's got good hands. So we really like what we got, and he's been really a leader both on and off the football field for us. And good to have him back in Colorado.
What did you see in Eddie Royal come in the draft?
Well, we thought as a staff that there wasn't anybody close relative to bump coverage, you know, beating bump coverage, and that's the first thing that we look for. The ability to, you know, get away from bump and separate yourself. But you don't know the other things. You only caught 34 balls. You don't know how consistent they are catching the ball. You're not sure, you know, how long it takes somebody to learn what they're doing. Is the game too big for them? Does it take 2, 3, 4 years for them to, you know, feel comfortable with the pro game? And Eddie was a guy that came in right from the first day, and you knew after 3 or 4 days that he's going to be your starting wide receiver, just the way he handled himself and his strength, his explosion, his ability to catch the ball. The game wasn't too big. You know, he's a very, very intelligent guy, so he picks up the playbook very quickly, and he loves to compete.
Mike, I know you probably were aware of Josh Morgan, too, who played opposite Royal at Virginia Tech.
Yes.
Was there, and obviously he's impressed the coaching staff in San Francisco quite a bit, is there a reason why those two guys, I mean, I guess it's kind of stunning you look at two guys who were so productive and, you know, who've been productive as rookies. Is there a reason why they weren't as good in college, why that offense wasn't a little bit better at Virginia Tech?
Well, you could see they just, I mean, both of them would have been different systems that, you know, passing type schools, I think, would have been a lot different. A lot of times you do what your quarterback can do, and I think that's what they did. You know, they were more concerned with, you know, winning games and making the wide receivers look good. I'm sure if they would have had a natural throwing quarterback, that the stats would have been a lot different. If he would have been at Florida, I think obviously with the quarterback that they had, they would have been a lot more productive.
Mike, what do you see from this Patriots offense post Tom Brady? I mean, what are you seeing with Matt Cassel leading them?
Well, we all know, you know, what Tom Brady, what he's done and what he's meant to, you know, the Patriots or, you know, the National Football League in general. But, you know, Tom is, you know, you can never make the right call. Tom would get you with the protections, you know, with the long counts, and no matter what blitz you had, he'd be able to redirect the offense. I mean, the offensive line to the right blitzer, and if you did get a guy free, he would know where his third, fourth wide receiver is. That just takes some time. You know, one of the reasons why, arguably, he's you know, the best in the game is just how he's played and, you know, how many games he's won. And, you know, it takes quarterbacks time. That doesn't happen overnight. So Matt will just keep on getting better and better as he experiences the offense, and I'm just hoping he doesn't do it Monday night.
Could you talk about just what the type of pressure there is on someone when you have a franchise icon, a quarterback like you had with Elway, and then I know Matt isn't in really the same position as you were when Elway retired, but, you know, just taking over, everybody always compares you to the last guy.
Yeah, and it's impossible to do, you know, especially when you – the Super Bowls, you know, the three Super Bowls and the way he's played, you know, how many games that New England's won in a row. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's anytime you play behind a legend, it's almost impossible. But, you know, at least what I've, the interviews that I've seen of Matt, he seems like he handles it real well. And Tom's helped him. And, you know, you understand that, you know, hey, you've got to forget about the critics and just concentrate on the job at hand. And that's what he's doing.
You have two offensive tackles who were in their first year starting. Is it odd, or I guess pleasant surprise, that you've only allowed two sacks on the year?
Yeah. It's you know, we've got two young guys that have really stepped up and played well. Ryan Clady, obviously the rookie, and Ryan Harris out of Notre Dame, our third round draft choice the year before, who had back surgery shortly after he came. You know, both guys have been playing well, and young guys with bright futures, and hopefully they can played like that the whole year.
Did you like it when Jay sort of called out Brandon Marshall, and how do you think Brandon has responded to that?
Well, Jay's pretty honest, and, you know, Jay spent a lot of time with Brandon in Atlanta. They hang around together, so anytime you're really good friends, sometimes you can call a guy out that normally, if you're not very close to him, you can't do, especially as a quarterback. You know, they care a lot about each other. They spent a lot of time, and Jay thought Brandon made a mistake, and it was a silly mistake. And so he was kind of expressing his feelings toward it. And, you know, Brandon has done a great job since then about handling himself the right way, been a leader off the field as well as on it, you know, just dealing with kids and trying to really represent our organization well and do things that can help kids, especially underprivileged kids. And he's been also doing a good job on the field.
Mike, as a coach, do you like it when a guy like Brandon puts it out there that he wants to catch 140 passes? Or is that something where you kind of shake your head and you say, oh, God?
Well, I think what happens is a guy gets more mature. He understands that, hey, you know, the most important thing is to win football games. And if you win football games, then good things happen to everybody. And, you know, I think that sometimes is a guy that has some individual goals that – he wants to meet. He's not afraid to share those goals, and Sometimes people look at him as very selfish, but he's not a selfish guy because you'll watch him block and you'll watch him do things that a lot of receivers won't do.
Two sort of league things I just want to run by, Mike. What do you think of the defensive headsets? How's that working out for you? And what's your approach on deferring in the coin toss?
I always want the ball. You know, to me, if you I've just been always that way from an offensive mindset that if you don't want the ball, you don't have a lot of confidence in your offense. Mm-hmm. So that's the way I operate. Now, it may change depending on the weather or the wind. If I thought there was a strategic advantage because it was too windy or something like that, I sure may defer to the second half or something along those lines. And I'm sorry, what was the other question?
Just the defensive headsets. How's that working out for you?
I think it's working out pretty good. I don't think it's foolproof yet, but sometimes they go out. But I think it helps. You don't have to spend as much time, signaling, and you still got to get ready for it. But it seems a little bit smoother.
Is Elvis Dumervil's injury hampering him, do you think, in the pass rush?
It has. I think last week he was pretty close back to normal, and this week he's even feeling a little bit better. So I think it did hamper him the first four games, having those fingers taped together, not being able to use that hand the way he wanted or the fingers the way he wanted. But he's close to having full use now, so hopefully we'll see in the second half of the season and playing at the level he played at last year.
Does he wear in a cast, or was it just taped up?
Yes, kind of taped up with two fingers. I think it is a small, like a soft cast, but nothing like it was earlier in the first 4 weeks.
Mike, this is kind of an offbeat league question, too, and specific to another team. When you guys played San Diego earlier, did you notice a big difference in Phillip Rivers this year from years past? And I mean, I guess one thing that I kind of got from other people was the balls coming out quicker.
Yeah, he reads coverages extremely well. And he's, he's what you look for in a quarterback. He's going to throw it to the right guy, makes very few mistakes. And you can see his growth just, as a quarterback over the last 2 years. He was very fortunate early in his career. He got to, sit on the bench and behind Drew and got a lot of mental reps. But, he's getting to be one of the best in the NFL.
Is the AFC as wide open as it's been in a while?
I think so. I think a lot of teams are close. A lot has to do with injuries. Teams can, stay healthy down the stretch, but I don't think there's any one team like, New England was all last year that I see anyhow, where you're just saying, hey, they may not lose. I know Tennessee's got an excellent defense right now, and they're playing well, but I don't see anybody in New England's territory of a year ago.
Last thing for me, completion percentage against you is pretty high. What's been going wrong there, and have you seen any positive steps lately?
Well, anytime someone's completing over 70% of their passes, it's hard to do that when there's no defense out there, so hopefully we get a little bit better.
Do you think it's...
That's something we're working on, obviously, not working hard enough, but hopefully we'll get better in the second half of the season, and we're definitely working on it, though. Do you think that New England will ever run with that percentage?
We'll ask Bill about that.
Okay. I'm sure he'll share that with me.
Yes. And, Mike, this is our last question. Thanks for the time here. Obviously, local interest in Tom Nalen, and he's out for the year, and we know his contract's up at the end of the year. Where do you see that heading? I mean, is the door still open that he might be able to come back one more time for another year maybe?
Yeah, that door's still open. And, I told Tom, I said, hey, just take your time and decide what you want to do. Tom's the type of guy that, he's going to play hurt. He's going to play with a lot of pain. And for him not to be able to play with the knee like it is not a good sign, because it's hard to keep a guy like that out. And, just taking a look at the x-rays, it does not look good at this time. But you never know what happens if he decides to get a microfracture, or maybe it just gets better. You just really don't know. So I don't want to count him out. Mm-hmm. But, boy, he's been a warrior for us. And you're talking about a guy that has helped this organization win a lot of games.
Hey, Mike, sorry, one last one. How do you know, you've had great success against the Patriots here since Bill's been here. I mean, is there any common thread there?
Now we've had some great games, to be honest with you. And, you know, I just know what type of coach he is, how good he is, and so you got to be at your best. You know, you can't give the game away. And if you do lose a turnover battle, or you make a mistake here or there, you're going to get beat. So our football team knows that. You know, a lot of respect for the organization and what they've accomplished, and we know we got to give them the best shot to have a chance.
That's great, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Really appreciate the time.
Okay, guys, take care.
Thanks, Mike.
Mike Shanahan, head coach of the Denver Broncos with members of the Patriots media. And before we hand it off to Jay Cutler and his conference call, and of course on the other side of that will be the Fantasy Lowdown with Brian Lowe coming up at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Just a couple of quick notes from practice today. Matt Light was at least in the media portion of practice today. So apparently even with his strained knee, bum knee, whatever it may have been, he was practicing today. So that's positive news for the Patriots in the offensive line. Those that were not spotted at the media portion of practice today were Jarvis Green, Nick Kazier, Eric Alexander, Lamont Jordan, Jonathan Wilhite, Lawrence Maroney, and Kelly Washington, just to bring you up to date from practice today. Now, Jay Cutler, quarterback for the Denver Broncos, leads the AFC. He ranks third in the NFL with almost 1,700 passing yards through 6 weeks. He was already named AFC Offensive Player of the Month for September. He had 300 passing yards in three of his first four games. He is on pace to surpass the Broncos' single-season record, which was set by Jake Plummer in 2004, if he continues the way that he is going. Leads the AFC, third in the NFL with completions, and his 12 touchdown passes, second in the AFC, fourth overall in the NFL. It has been a good offensive start, at the very least, for Jay Cutler, and he's one that certainly the Patriots will have to pay plenty of attention to on Monday night. So we'll wrap it up here by letting you listen in to Jay Cutler with members of the Patriots media.
Hey Jay, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Doing well. We got some reporters up here from New England. We appreciate you taking a few minutes for us.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to start you off. You know, we have a guy up here, obviously you're familiar with, Teddy Bruschi, who obviously underwent the stroke, and he's sort of become an advocate for stroke awareness. And
yeah.
I just sort of wanted to ask you, with your situation with the diabetes, is that something you've sort of felt comfortable going, becoming sort of a spokesman or an advocate for that?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, in some situations you don't really have a choice, because you're in the public eye, and we receive a lot of calls, a lot of emails, a lot of requests, and, I take it to heart, and I enjoy it, and, it's tough during the season, but definitely in the off season, get more involved. I mean, now we're kind of involved. It's just hard to do a lot of appearances and stuff and talk to people, but it's definitely something I'm looking forward to in the future.
Jay, given all the stresses that a player has on its body, how difficult is it to be a professional athlete with diabetes?
It's tough, and you just got to come to terms with it. I was fortunate enough to get diagnosed in April and have some time to adjust to it and get comfortable with it before the season started. But it's part of my everyday life now. I get up with it and I go to sleep with it. So I've adjusted. I mean, it's a burden at times, but it's just something I have to deal with.
And how much better do you feel now than you did last year when, the condition caused you to lose so much weight?
It's night and day difference. I'm 100% better. Last year, towards the end of the season, I just didn't know if I was going to make it to the season. I felt so bad. And it really takes a toll on you, and it's just hard to explain to people that don't have it or have never went through it what it's like. It's really tough.
Did you understand the condition before being diagnosed?
No, I had no idea.
And how has it sort of changed you, and do you think it's something that will affect you for the duration of your career?
It's something I'm going to have to deal with, obviously, for the rest of my life. So it's not going to hamper me on the football field at all, though.
Great.
Was keeping it quiet a competitive thing with you guys? Cause I know it didn't really come out until this year. Was that just kind of a competitive thing you guys had done?
What do you mean?
Well, just trying to, I guess, maintain a competitive advantage, or not giving the opponent...
We didn't find out until April I had it.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
What's... You guys have only allowed 2 sacks this year. How much of that is you? How much of it is the offensive line? And
it's a combination. Early in the year, the first 2 or 3 games, we saw a lot of blitzes, and the line did a good job of picking stuff up. I got rid of the ball on time, and we've been fortunate the last
two or three games, you know, that people aren't blitzing this much. But, I mean, the way the offensive line's playing, you know, I got a lot of confidence in them.
How important is it for a quarterback to be able to sense what's going on around him in the pocket and still keeping his eyes downfield? I mean, is that tough to learn? Have you always been able to do that?
No, I mean, it's not something you can learn or teach. Either got it or you don't.
Jay, what have you seen on film from the Patriots defense?
You know, they're a good defense. I mean, they're extremely smart. They're able to take away some players, from teams offensively. They mix it up. You know, they do a lot of different stuff. They throw stuff at you. They're in 3-4. They're in a 4-3. You know, they just keep you on your toes. And so we're going to have a handful.
Jay, you were obviously a little bit upset with Brandon, and you voiced that publicly. Do you feel like he's grown a lot of late?
Absolutely. He's matured a lot, you know, and I said some stuff and called him out and brought it to his attention, and, you know, he reacted well to it. We talked about it, and you know, since then, he's been a great teammate. I mean, on and off the field.
This 3 weeks, you've been in the teens and point-wise. What haven't you been doing the last three games that you were doing in the first three?
You know, we've had turnovers. And, you know, it takes away chances for us to score. We've had I mean, seven or eight turnovers and our two losses. So we've got to take care of the ball better.
Jay, did you have a chance to look at the film from when the Patriots played San Diego last Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
Did it strike you that they played maybe more man defense than what they had played the rest of the year?
You know, they've been all over the map a little bit. You know, you're not for sure what you're going to get with those guys. And, you know, I think they thought they could play man and control Rivers and the receivers and kind of stop LT. But they got hit with some big plays. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with us.